This is the Living Fearless Today podcast, a show that helps men like you and me who are struggling to get unstuck and overcome fear to live confidently and courageously. I'm your host and transformation coach, Mike Forrester, helping you create the change you want now. Join me as I interview men who've conquered their challenges and soared to success as they spill their secrets on how they live fearless today. Well, hello and welcome back, my friend. Man, this week I'm joined with Paul Zolman. And Paul is like the love language linguist. That is a mouthful. But the man is just, he's looking at people and seeing the best in them. And when you hear his story, where he came from and where he's at now, man, it removes the excuse of, hey, I'm where I'm at. I'm who I am. There's no hope. There's no possibility of change. Paul is the living epitome of the fact of, hey man, coming from a place of abuse to being in at a place of love and being the one that's, you know, showing that to people removes the excuses. So I'm excited to get into our conversation today with Paul. Paul, how are you doing today, my friend?
Doing great, Mike. Thank you for inviting me to be here with you. I'm enjoying this and looking forward to our conversation.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, my friend. Well, Paul, let's start off. What does life look like for you today on the professional side?
Mike, I love the way you introduced me, and as a love language linguist, you know what? To me, that's a sexy title. You can have it too. And is the whole message that we want to relay today that really you can be a love language linguist. What I did was learn all the love languages to increase my literacy of love. And by doing that, I was single at the time. And by doing that, I actually became more qualified to find the person that also would be more compatible. I'm happily married, got a career, just an extended career. I've had a financial career for the most part, but just enjoying life at this time. You know, enjoying interaction with people. I actually am a leader of about 98 men right now, just their leader, trying to help them learn how to interact better one with another, learning how to do activities together, just growing with that group of men, enjoying life with that as well.
Cool. Yeah, and that's being able to understand who you are and how to love the people around you. And that's crucial. And I think too much of the time we have like a preconceived idea and it's wrong. So I'm excited to really jump into that here in a bit of like, how do we get a grasp? Well, let's jump over onto the personal side of life. What does that look like for you today?
Mike, that's a great question. The personal side of life looks for me like I feel like I'm seen as I wanted to be seen before, but was not seen. On a personal side, I feel like I always felt like I was a person that would listen to people, a person that would express love in a certain way to people, a person that would extend words or actions that would value that person for who they are. And not be judgmental in any way, shape, or form, but just trying to send out kindness to them and then watch how they react. And watching how they react, sometimes people don't know how to react to kindness because maybe they've not received kindness like that in their whole life. Or some people don't know how to react to a compliment because nobody's recognized them as a person. And I really think that this crosses all the lines of diversity that are flailing out there right now, that there's a lot of people that want diversity. You don't even have to have that. Just look at that person as a person. And once you get to that point of looking to that person as a person, you don't need any diversity. You're still seeing it as seeing that person as a person, not a thing. Not an object, not something to be used as a stepping stone to get where you want to get, but just as a person. And I think that's a huge a long way from where I was many years ago, but it was just watching for opportunities to see who is that person and then be able to express that. You know, people are too close to the forest, so to speak, to see the trees. I love your name, Mike Forrester. So, you know, just too close to the forest to see the trees. And so it takes people like you and me, Mike, to be able to watch and look at these people, identify what is good about them, and then express that. And it just, it melts any animosity, any preconceived notions they might have about you. And then they want to come back for more, and they'll start being attracted to you. You almost become a magnet of people because they want that love. They want that dripping that you're giving on them, that goodness that you're sending out their way. They really want that. So you become that magnet.
And I mean, dude, that's so huge. I love the fact that you said, Paul, you're being seen as who you wanted to be. And I think so many times it's like we want to be seen, but then when we are, it's in a way that it's almost like the opposite, right? We want to be seen as strong. We're seen as weak. We want to be seen as confident. We're seen as like insecure, but you've now put in the work, done the learning, done the activity, you know, like mentally, emotionally, physically, you've done all these things to where you figured out who you wanted to be. And it's now aligned to how people are seeing you. How did you get to the point of, I guess, first determining how you wanted to be seen, Paul? Because it's like, there's a lot of stuff that led up that it wasn't how you wanted to be seen, and what you were experiencing wasn't stuff that, you know, was in a healthy light, but yet you figured out this is who Paul Zolman is. And you owned that. How did you get to that point of having the clarity of who you wanted to be seen as?
That's a great question, Mike. And I think that probably with just a little example is the best way for me to explain it. I hope you don't mind a visual example. But the other day I was out walking and found a walking stick. You know, it's a perfect length, about 3.5 feet tall. One side of the stick, it didn't have any bark on it, just like you see it here. One side of the stick is very smooth. You put your hand there just to hold it nicely. But I noticed that the other side of the stick has these little points on it. And it's just a few different points. So you wouldn't want to put your hand there. So I call this the, pardon the pun, naughty side of the stick. And this is the nice side of the stick. So what I realized, Mike, is that the anger that I had on the naughty side of the stick, I didn't want to be there. I wanted to be on that nice side of the stick. And I think that when you have that self-actualization of where you want to be, you have to determine where you're at right now. You have to have those moments that you can say, well, where am I? And for me, that stick became the spectrum for me. And having a spectrum is a great way to find out, well, where am I at? For one side of the spectrum, I had anger. The other side of the spectrum, I put love. So if I were doing something, just anything, Mike, and I could put an adjective to it, I would determine, well, where does that adjective, where does it set on that spectrum? Take, for example, sarcasm or impatience. Both of them are on the angry side of the stick. Sarcasm is not a nice thing. It's not a loving thing. Most of the time, other people are the butt of the joke. It's hardly ever make yourself the butt of the joke, but it just is one of those things that you don't want to be doing. If you determine that you're sarcastic, figure out what would be the opposite of being sarcastic. For me, this was the key, Mike. This was absolutely the key. And what I came up with was that, well, maybe somebody that's genuine, or somebody that's authentic, or somebody that's true blue, as it's spoken in that way. When you put sarcasm and those three adjectives, genuine, authentic, or true blue, on the table, most people that have any good sense about them would choose that they want to be authentic. They want to be that person that is this true in all things. You would want to move toward that end of the stick. But until you are able to find out where you are in the stick, you can't even set goals to go there. So I use the opposites, just trying to identify what traits do I have right now and where is it on the stick. When I found out where it was on the stick, then and only then could I say, well, what is the opposite? How do I get to that loving side of the stick? How do I get to that loving side of the spectrum for me and set goals then to move that direction? And it's just a back and forth process like that. Black, or it's one side of the stick to the other side of the stick, just determining and articulating, where am I? When you do that, you're going to be able to set the goals that you need to get to that other side of the stick, the side where you want to be. That's how I basically arrived. I kept going back and forth. I'd have a bad moment. I'd say, well, what was that? What's the adjective that describes that bad moment? And what's the opposite of that? And then that way I was able to set the road, create the path that I didn't have ever before in my life, create the path that would take me to that point on the spectrum.
Yeah. And being self-aware to say where you're at, like the good and the bad, man, that's powerful and very insightful, because that is almost like, you know, how you can determine where that North Star is, right? What you're wanting to be, you know, be, and how to get there. Because otherwise it's like, okay, I know where Los Angeles is, but I have no idea where I'm at. So how do I get there? You either drive maybe closer, but the likelihood is you're going to drive in a different direction other than Los Angeles. You may end up in Miami or New York, right? So
exactly. Great analogy there.
I appreciate it. So you had described like your childhood as like a childhood boot camp of abuse, and just what you came out with, you know, like I can look at my life. I've looked at, you know, clients. What we get from our parents is almost like a blueprint, like a tattoo, right? It gets printed upon us and we then pick up those traits and carry them on. What did you kind of start out with and experience that put you in that place where you're looking and going, hey, I'm self-aware, this is where I'm at, and this is not what I want to be? Like, what were those experiences that like you went through as a child that kind of put you on the other side of the stick, right? The naughty side of the stick when you were looking at it.
Well, that's a great question, Mike. And I call it an angry culture that I was raised in. The angry culture looks like this. It's people that talk over people or talk while other people are talking so that nobody gets heard. So there's no listening going on and there's no validation going on. There's nothing like that. Second thing is that there's no boundaries, that, you know, if whatever anybody else's business is also becomes your business, that you somehow get to have an opinion. If someone's offending you because of what they're doing, then that makes it part of your business that they're offending you. And don't even worry about how you got offended, but it's their problem. They're the ones, and you can blame them. It's the victim mentality in that way. The next thing is that there's a lot of abuse. There's physical abuse, sexual abuse, verbal abuse, social abuse, financial abuse. There are all those kind of abuses were in that childhood as well. And it just learning all that made you, you know, you're a protege of an abuser. And just what would you expect? Obviously, you expect that to come out in some way, shape, or form. I'm number 10 of 11 children, Mike. And as number 10 of 11, I had a younger sister and an older sister. All the rest were boys. And so all the boys were older than I was, and they do stupid stuff like, you know, ride a motorcycle we had a back parking lot for a clinic in our backyard, basically. And in the weekends, they'd put the chains up, but my brothers would get around the chains and then they pop a wheelie and they go through the chain. They'd flip over the motorcycle and they'd have a medical alert the clinic was closed, so they had to go to the hospital. Stupid stuff like that. My father would get annoyed. Knowingly, he would get annoyed. But what would happen is my father was a truck driver. He's gone through the week, home on the weekends. And so he was fabulous, Mike, about dating my mother. I don't know how he ever did this, but he never missed a Friday night date with my mother. He wasn't creative, not at all. It was always the Maverick bar. It was always over alcohol. So I never was there, but I can imagine my mother just telling my father all the things that had happened during the week, starting probably with the oldest child, because as he's listening about these stupid things that my brothers were doing, he's getting annoyed, stacking these annoyances on top of one another until he's ready to have that flash of anger. Well, guess what? After 10 annoyances stacked up, I'm number 10. And I felt like I was the butt of all that anger, all that pent up anger that was coming together. And especially I'm between two girls. If I even look cross-eyed at those girls because of the way he valued my mother, took her out every week, if I even look cross-eyed at those girls, I was in trouble. So between my brothers and trying to not look cross-eyed at my sisters, I was always in trouble, it seems. But I thought I was a really good kid. So I grew up always trying to keep the rules. I did not want to get in trouble, did not want to get the belt, did not want to get the horrible spanking. One horrible spanking, I remember being black and blue for more than 3 weeks after a spanking, Mike. I did not want to get all that. So at age 17, I take this survey test about what career I should pick. And obviously, it was a career about rules, but I would be a great IRS agent. I had no idea that I did not want to be an IRS agent, and I didn't, but I still had that rule mentality. So I went into accounting and became a CFO of a public company.
Like, even if you did follow every rule, you've got all these brothers ahead of you that they're not following the rules, and you're going to be the one that gets it. Like, wow. So yeah, I understand why you've got this whole rule, following mindset, because you're trying to keep yourself out of trouble as best you can.
That was the whole idea of it, Mike, just trying to keep out of trouble. And so with that, I start, I leave home because, there almost is no other way to leave those circumstances except to leave those circumstances. After my junior year of high school, I left home. Had a car that I'd purchased. I was a manager at McDonald's at the time, and it was 17 years old. I'm a junior in high school, firing seniors in high school because they're not showing up for work. And I remember I fired more than 10 people as a 17-year-old, and I had gone through that. So I had a little bit of leadership, and I knew how to help them obey rules. And that was my whole deal. I can help you obey a rule, and maybe the IRS would have been a great spot for me in that way. But I moved into with my brother. I wanted a little softer side of life. And he had been married for a couple of years and had a couple of children. I never experienced that. So as number 10 of 11, I really didn't get to play with a baby sister or anything like that. So he had these small children that I could play with, and we had a great time. But I found out that my brother had the same issue, that he would stack one annoyance on top of another until he had a flash of anger. It wasn't toward me. Obviously, I wasn't number 10 in that family. It wasn't mostly toward me, but he still would have these flashes of anger. And everybody would be on the defensive, just trying to hide from this. It'd be like, Mike, the guy in the swimming pool that has the accident. Everybody scatters. And they're saying, wasn't me. And they're running away because now that guy's all by himself, isolated with that accident. That was me. I felt like I was repelling. My brother was repelling people. That's what the feeling was like. And I realized I had that same thing, stacking these annoyances on top of another to have that flash of anger. I realized that's a generational thing. It's not genetic. It's not something that can't be changed. But it was not changed through the generations and was passed on. It came to a point 15 years ago, after my first marriage dissolved, that I was dating, and it was time to take this woman for Big Brother approval. Number 10 of 11, Mike, I still needed Big Brother approval. So I took her to my brother's house. First thing that my sister-in-law did was pull her aside and say, the only emotion that the Zolan family learned growing up is anger. At first, I did not. I said, Then it made me mad. And I thought, you know, I just verified exactly what she said. I thought at that moment that this is something that either I need to stop or I need to continue. And I realized that if that's the perception that others or outsiders have of the Zolan family, there's no wonder that people are repelled by us. And I wanted to change that. I thought here and now is the time to change that. So I started reading books. I started reading The Color Code and then The Five Love Languages. And I really kind of settled on The Five Love Languages because Dr. Gary Chapman was a Baptist pastor. And he said that I'm Christian, Mike, and he said that these would bring you closer to Jesus Christ because these actually are things that Jesus Christ did in his life. I wanted that for my own life, wanted to improve my life and improve it for my children as well. And so I thought, I'll follow those principles. Well, I read the book 4 or 5 times, Mike. I didn't get it. You mean, Dr. Chapman, if I guess what Mike's love language is and cater to that, we're going to be buddies? I'm a bad guesser. It hasn't worked up until now. Why do you think it'll work now? So that wasn't working for me. Then, Mike, the second thing that Dr. Chapman has is, well, if you take this survey, then you'll find out what your own love language is. Well, what the heck am I supposed to do with that? Advertise? Hello, Mike. I'm gifts. What do you have for me today? And at one point in that time, Mike, I thought, well, if I made it a badge that said, hello, I'm gifts, and then put my Venmo QR code, then maybe that'd be a little upgrade from the beggar on the corner, and I could just get some money into my account. Just so awkward. Was it working? So I thought, well, you know, even as dysfunctional as our family was, Mike, growing up, I thought, well, maybe I can make it a game. So I contacted Dr. Chapman, knowing that he had all the rights and copyrights and everything to all this information. Contacted him, asked him if he was licensing those little icons or the pictures that he had for each one of the love languages. And his attorney wrote back after a couple of weeks, said, no, we're not doing that right now at all. So I had an attorney in my neighborhood that was a friend, and he was a copyright attorney, went to him and made this suggestion, talked to him about the idea. He said this. He said, theory, like the love language theory, is not copyrightable. Application is. So with that, I made my own icons and then created it into a game. And it's that game, Mike, that actually helped me make that paradigm shift that we're talking about right now. It's the game, as simple as it is. It takes 2 seconds of the day. But that investment of 2 seconds in at the beginning of the day in yourself makes all the difference in the day.
It's cool. Well, I'll tell you, Paul, I think you gave me my Christmas gift ideas. So I'm going to give all my family a shirt that says, I am so-and-so, this is mine. but in all honesty, man, I mean, it can be awkward when it's like you're learning in them. You know, as far as like touch, acts of service, words, gift, time, you're looking and going, okay, what is Paul's, like, what do you value? Until I get to really who you are, I mean, there's no way to tangibly or honestly know. And I am still guessing, unless you're, like you talked about, wearing that shirt, you know? So I think that's, you know, comical, but there's a lot of truth to that. Is, you know, just, it can be a hard thing to get to.
It really is a huge learning curve. And unless you've got that determination that you want to be better, this isn't going to work for you. You've got to have that within yourself that I want to be a different person. I want to get to a better place in my life. And if you don't have that with you right now, it's not going to happen. If you've got the desire, there are tools. This is a tool we created that's going to help you on your way.
Yeah. And I think the interesting thing is, like, you can look at the people around you and be like, hey, mine is, you know, like you were talking about, mine is gifts. And so everybody wants a gift. But the problem is, you know, like if yours is time, Paul, and I go, here's a gift, I'm expecting you to be elated. Oh my gosh, Mike got me a gift, and to respond accordingly. But when you're like, this isn't time, I want time with you, Mike, not gifts. It's like, it kind of falls flat. And then it leaves you to process your feelings of like, well, what's wrong? Did I get a bad gift? And the whole guessing thing. So how did you get past that? You've talked about, you read it, you know, you read, the five love languages, like, you know, 3, 4, 5 times. You've read through it and you're still guessing. So like, how did you get clarity on what to do to really express love to those around you and, you know, like, your family? How did you figure that out?
Great question, Mike. And I love the word clarity that you used, because reading that book was not clear at all to me. I was always wondering, well, now what direction is it? Is that, as I'm giving it away, or is this coming my way? And I just could not get the directions. And is the love language my love language? Is it the one I like to receive, or is it the one I like to give away? What is primary love language? And I just couldn't get the directions of it. And then it just occurred to me, Mike, that, oh, I can't bid love to come my way. What do I have control over? And I realized, oh, well, I can send it out and I can respond when it comes my way. With that understanding, then I was able to draw the boundaries. Remember, growing up, I didn't know what the boundaries were. I was always looking over the fence saying, well, you should be doing this, you should be doing that, and thinking that I had control over other people's life. I absolutely don't. I realized, oh, this is what I have control over, sending love out and responding when it comes my way. So I had to improve the skills that I had in both directions, the skills of sending it out. As you mentioned already, Mike, it's really hard to send out something that you're not familiar with yourself. There's definitely that learning curve, but it's also equally hard to receive it when it's coming your way, when it's not your primary love language. Dr. Chapman made that very clear. Most people can't see it. What I developed is a dice. Do you mind if I show it right now, Mike?
Sure, please.
So I created a cube that has the love languages on it. The cube has obviously 6 sides. The one I'm holding up, the side I'm holding up right now, has 2 hands put together, creating a heart, like Taylor Swift's heart that she always does. But this heart is a little bit different. Has a conversation fly out from it. So this represents, it's a picture that represents the words from the heart. Those would be the words, the kind words that you're going to say throughout the day. They could be compliments. They could be, I love you. They could be all those kind of things. Or it could be just as simple as a recognition of the talents or the abilities, the kindness, or the good things that you see in another person. The next one I'm holding is a hand holding an hourglass. Hourglasses measure time. So this would represent time. This is spending time with someone. So when you discover somebody's love language is time, they like to just hang out. My wife loves this. She loves just to watch Korean dramas. We don't talk. We can't talk. We got to read the captions on the TV so we can understand what's going on in the movie. So there's no talking, but it's just spending time together is what she likes. The next one looks like a waiter holding a platter that would represent service. That's an icon for service. People that like to be served like their car wash. They like the carpet vacuum. They like help with the laundry. They like the trash taken out. They like to be served. You'll find out a lot of people like that. The next one is two hands, looks like they're holding hands. That would be touch. And then the last one would be a hand holding a gift. That would be gifts. 6 sides on the cube. The last side is one I created that I call it surprise me. It's a hand holding a question mark. So, Mike, just 2 instructions. Your little cube every day, whatever it lands on, that is the love language you practice giving away all day that day. All day to everyone, not just your significant other. Like I said, I created this when I was single. I said, Dr. Chapman, who in the heck am I supposed to love? I don't have that significant other that you're talking about. And then I just realized, oh, well, I get to love everyone. Mike, it was perfect for me because I don't know anyone that's with their significant other 24/7. Some people don't want to be with their significant other 24/7. So the creation of this helped me have a full-time habit of sending love out. There was no letting up. I had to develop the character and the mindset to send love out all day, every single day. Wasn't just part-time, just at home when I'm with a significant other, and then I could do whatever I want at work or at play or anywhere else. This was full-time. I needed that type of environment, or created that type of environment to everybody, and needed to send love to everybody to be able to overcome what I had, that stacking of annoyance about other people. What was wrong with them? Why did they do things that way? Just focusing on what their faults were, focusing on their weaknesses. Why was I even doing that? I was looking at maybe 10, maybe 20% of the personality of that individual. Mike, I was missing 80 to 90% of what was right about that person, was the good part of it. And I was focusing on that minority portion, and everybody has faults. I needed to move from that negative attitude to actually look at the positive. What's right with that person? What can I love about that person? And rolling the die helped me make that transition and made it all day long. Like I said, there's a learning curve, because all these love languages weren't my primary love language, but I was practicing giving it away and watching for people to react. When they would light up, that's when I discovered what their primary or secondary love language was. No longer, Mike, did I have to say, excuse me, could we pause this relationship for a moment while I have you take this survey so I know how to love you? You don't have to do awkward anymore.
And it definitely can be, especially if you're putting a pause and stop in the name of, I don't know, what is your gift, you know?
That's right.
What's your love language? When you look at the fact of your perspective or your focus, like your attention was on that 10 to 20%, you know, hyper-focused on what somebody was doing wrong. When you now look back at that, was that kind of like as a result of what you grew up with, like the culture of anger, and that was a way of controlling? Or where do you see that habit came from?
Absolutely, Mike. You're absolutely right about that. I think it was more of a knee-jerk reaction, though. This was a programming. This is what my parents programmed me to do, because that's what they did. We sense to fall into that trap of do what our parents did. Everybody makes the declaration at age 17 or 18 that I'm not going to be like my parents. You make that declaration, but then it just kind of comes out. And so as a knee-jerk reaction, it was either to get control over that person, to get that person to do what you wanted them to do, what you wanted them to do, not what they wanted to do, but what you wanted them to do, and get in your path and your track. And it's just, it was not a good circumstance, and it'll drive people away. It repels people. And I did not want to do that anymore. I realized that I was repelling people, not drawing them to me, I wasn't a chick magnet. I wasn't a person magnet at all. Nobody was being drawn to me by kindness. Now I've got a brother-in-law that calls me Dr. Love. I would have never had that designation ever in my whole life, you know, had he seen what I was doing previously.
Yeah, that's one. At this point, you put that on as, you know, you talked about your badge earlier, like your name. That's definitely one you put up there, where it's like, this is 180 degrees from where I was before. And, you know, it seems to make sense that if, like, date night for your mom and dad was, you know, started at, you know, son number one and get all the way down to you, and it's naming off all the negative things, like the things that were troublesome, right? That it makes sense that it's like, yeah, I'm focused on where is the trouble? What's the trouble? Because that was the weekly habit of looking for the faults. Whereas if they had talked about, hey, this is what Paul did this week that was great, and they're looking to affirm you and build you up and celebrate these wins, probably would have been a different perspective, and you wouldn't have had to make that transformation. It just goes back to the power that not only as parents, but just, you know, people in life, what we can brand or kind of transfer to other people in the habits if we're around them long enough. And we also need to be mindful because we can be the recipients of that. Just like you've now become Dr. Love, man, I'm sure that that has impacted the family dynamics, right? Because they're seeing that you're right in their face. So how has that changed, like, the legacy or the culture of your family from, you know, what was anger? Is there now any transformation that's occurred because you, like, took that first step and pioneered a different path?
Great question, Mike. And I think that with any change that you're going to make in your life, there's going to be some skepticism on the people that were in your past life, that they're going to be very tentative. They're going to be suspicious at times of, well, is that really his character? Constantly, they'll be testing you. They'll be trying to be those crabs in the bucket. They're trying to pull you back down into that bucket. And if you've got to resist that, then you've got to know that that's coming, that there will be people like that. But you've got to make the best thing, Mike, that anyone can do in this situation is make a determination. Who am I? Who am I going to be? And who do I want to be? And just focus on that. You know, even being called Dr. Love makes me have this reputation that now I've got to keep that reputation in those circles of my wife's family and her brothers. I've got to keep that cool head. I've got to keep that title, so to speak, and not get upset, but have a calming influence on those people that are around me. Live up to those new titles. Live up to that, whoever you want to be. Live up to be that person on a consistent basis. That's probably one of the hardest things. But what I found is that take the 2 seconds it takes to roll that die every day. It's going to be one of the best investments that you'll get a huge return. Everybody I know wants to put in a little bit in an investment and get a lot back. This is one of those things that you can do that with a little bit of time, setting the tone or the purpose for the day, setting the theme for the day, following that theme, sticking to that theme, watching for people that are lighting up. You'll light up 3 to 10 people in a day. For that person, you're discovered what their primary or secondary love language is, make a mental note, and then wash, rinse, repeat for that person. That's how you continue to do that, continue to develop that habit of sending out love all day long. As you're doing that, you're doing it different, a little bit different every single day, you're going to find different people that line up for different genres of the love languages you're sending out. And now, Mike, what happens is that instead of stacking annoyances to get to that flash of anger, you're stacking kindness on top of kindness, on top of kindness, on top of kindness to get to the higher laws of love. You're getting to the higher laws of love like charity or compassion or intimacy. Can you insult your wife or your significant other, continually insult them and expect intimacy at the end of the day? Give me a break. Seriously? It's not going to happen. You got to stack the kindnesses to get to that higher law of love. Those higher laws of love are forgiveness and mercy, trust. You're going to build that trust. And people, those even in your past that did not trust you or were skeptical, when's it going to flash? They were skeptical about that. Now can see your consistency in doing what you said you're going to do. Make your words match your actions and send that love out all day long. Practice it. Over a 30-day period, Mike, you're going to know all 5 love languages and increase your ability to see it when it comes your way. Most people, like I said, and Dr. Chapman agrees with this, most people can only see what they like. They see their primary love language when it comes their way. But anything else coming their way, they may not be able to see it. This gives you that peripheral vision to say, oh, they're loving on me. It's not my primary love language, but you can respond to it now. You've got the educational level, the literacy level to be able to respond to that now, to better react when it comes your way. In your realm, that's in your control. Improve that reception of that, and you're going to have a better life of love. It's going to work a lot better for you.
If I'm understanding this right, Paul, you're practicing all five. And like, so let's say mine is gift, my wife's is time. In practicing this, like you talked about, you're more self-aware. Hey, my wife is loving me in her language. Is that increasing your sensitivity to her expressing it? Like, you're aware of it, but are you also getting more value out of it, even though it's not your primary love language?
Absolutely, Mike. And what's happening is if she's time and your gifts, she's giving you time and you're not noticing because you want a gift. And now with this new program, what you're doing is you're noticing and you're acknowledging her gift or her gift of time. It could be a gift. And look at it like that. You know, as far as gifts, you know, since we're on gifts, as far as gifts go, I look at gifts as the umbrella love language of all of them. You can give a hug as a gift. You can spend time with someone as a gift. You can serve them dinner as a gift, or you could just write them a note as a gift. It really is the umbrella of all of them. It could be anything like that. But now, Mike, if your gifts and she's time and she's sending time your way, wanting to spend time with you, look at it as a gift. And with that new mindset, those new eyes that you have, and you've seen that as a gift, that's the gift that she gives in her way, and you see it as a gift, then you've closed that communication gap that most people have. No longer is that gap there, because you see her and she sees you. That's a huge difference.
Paul, this is genius, because as I'm playing this out in my head, if I'm doing this and I'm expressing more love to my wife is going to want to express love, respect to me. Paul, that puts in more strength to that relationship, right? I'm more invested in my marriage than ever before, right? Because I feel respected. I feel loved. Same with my wife. I mean, you're just putting in like a solid, like concrete rock foundation, right? This is built where you're tied together, steel rebar, all the whole deal, right? You've got a bunker. And if you're building that within then the relationships of your children, they're not going to go looking for love from somebody else, because within that family, you're providing it. So you've got like a secure, loving, just fostering relationship that regardless of whether you grew up in that or not, you can cultivate that kind of environment. And I'm just like, Paul, that just blows things up. I mean, like, that's a healthy environment where you all grow together. And there's the forgiveness, like you've talked about, the higher levels of love, right? There's the forgiveness, and I'm looking at like, oh my gosh, well, that changes it for the gratitude, and hey, I want to hang out with you, and that just stacks on things in a positive way. And it's like, I think your boundaries would change as well, to where it's like you're able to ferret out and discern, this isn't healthy. I don't want to ruin what I'm experiencing here with my family and the relationships here. Like, you almost become more invested, like more watchful, mindful of things threatening that could, you know, negatively alter what you have going on. I think that's just genius, Paul. Intentionally practicing what is unnatural in how to love somebody else, so that you become sensitive and more aware. I love it, Paul.
Thank you very much. It really is that awareness. It's that I call it a literacy level, that everybody should have this as a foundation. And the five love languages is like becoming an amateur at love. When you practice all five together, then you become a pro. That's when you get to the higher levels of love. But get to be the amateur. Don't be a beginner. Don't be a novice. Get to the amateur level so that you actually have that foundation. And even at the amateur level, you still are learning and still experiencing, looking and seeing other people. When you can see them, they're going to see you differently as well. Whatever you're sending out, it's coming back to you. But just keep making the deposits out there, sending that love out, sending that awareness out, and make sure that you're aware of the needs of other people. Watch for them to light up. When you make their day, there's great satisfaction in making someone's day. They're going to remember that event, and so will you for the rest of your life.
Man, that is just like the power of being able to step in and show kindness, right? You know, the impact it can have. Well, Paul, thank you so much for everything you've shared. The fact that we can change, it is being aware of what's going on and where you want to get to, but also then being able to have a different perspective, right? Being able to look for the positive things and then love people wherever they're at, and like being intentional to pick up when they have that spark, when they have that joy, and then just being able to keep attention. Man, the power that's in that, Paul, absolutely amazing. Paul, how can guys reach out to you outside of this podcast?
Thank you, Mike, for that. I have a website. It's called theroleoflove.com, R-O-L-E of love.com. And it's R-O-L-E. You'll notice, Mike, that we roll the dice outside of us. It's not that. R-O-L-E is what changes within us. So R-O-L-E of love.com. They can find, I've got a book, I've got a journal, I've got the dice, and I've got an ebook out there as well that can give you 101 ways to express love on a daily basis. About 20 different suggestions for each type of love language. But they can, it's all on the website. It really is on special right now. All three of those things, if you wanted the bundle, would be $29.99. It's a whole lot less than just one therapy session. Invest in yourself. This is a great way to invest in yourself. It's small, it's simple, but it has huge impact in your life.
Fantastic. Paul, thank you very much, my friend. I appreciate it.
Been my privilege, Mike. Thank you for your time.
Thanks so much, my friend, for joining me on another episode. If you found the information within the show helpful, please leave a review on the platform you're listening to. It helps raise the show's visibility so other men can join us in breaking free. See you on the next episode, and remember to continue putting yourself out there. Have a great one.